The Colorado Rockies are 8-18. Roster moves have been made. Injuries have occurred. And let's talk Urania, Davis, Lamet, Blackman, and Bryant. This is Adjusting for Altitude.
Baseball is a difficult game. The average hitter gets on base in less than 40% of their plate appearances. Yet the average pitcher gives up 4 runs every 9 innings pitched. The sport is a challenge on its own. But at Altitude, the problems for baseball players compound. Less break on pitches, balls that fly significantly farther than at sea level, and then after playing in such a treacherous environment, the players play in normality for half of their regular season. Adjustments must be made by those who don the purple pinstripes of the Colorado Rockies. We discuss those adjustments here. This is Adjusting for Altitude with baseball fanatic and aspiring MLB general manager, Christopher Nelson II.
Welcome, welcome to Adjusting for Altitude, breaking down the unique challenges and difficulties faced by the only MLB team that plays a mile above sea level. Streaming on all podcasting platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and the rest. I am your host, Christopher Nelson II. If you haven't checked out last week's episode of Adjusting for Altitude, this is my obligatory moment to remind you to go check that out. We debuted a new format for this podcast on last week's episode, so it was a little bit in between, but you know, it wasn't bad. We got the message across. We broke down a few contributors to the Rockies' success, I guess, limited success thus far this season on last week's episode, and we're going to do the same thing today, but go ahead and check it out if you haven't. Also, if you don't follow me on social media, go ahead and follow me over on Instagram at I am the second, IamThaSecond. I love interacting with listeners. I actually got to interact with a listener last week, believe it or not, who did find my Instagram and DM'd me saying he liked the podcast, made a few suggestions, and I was like, all right, cool. I like this. I like listener engagement. Go be a listener who's engaged. Go ahead and follow me over there. But anywho, let's hop into today's episode, shall we? So, I mean, it's been another pretty expected week in Colorado Rockies baseball. Nothing super exciting has really occurred. We've kind of just seen more of the same. A team that struggles to score runs, a team that struggles to pitch, or some combination of the two. And as a result, the front office decided to make some roster moves in response. Ilaris Montero was sent down to AAA, and Brenton Doyle was recalled from AAA to make his major league debut earlier in the week against Cleveland. And I think, in all honesty, this move makes a little bit more sense than a lot of people are going to realize. Obviously, it doesn't make much sense to recall an outfielder for an infielder, but I mean, when we're talking about prospects, the organization kind of just sees them all in the same basket. Like, this is a guy who's working on stuff and needs to be sent down to the minors to make some tweaks to technique or approach. So we'll send him down. We don't necessarily care that it's not a perfect position for position switch. And actually, it's a good thing Doyle was called up, because Doyle wasn't just called up in response to Montero's struggles, but he was also called up in response to a Jonathan Daza injury over the weekend in Philadelphia. I think he got hit on the hand. I wasn't able to watch that game, but it sounded like he'll be out for at least a week or so. Doesn't sound very promising for Jonathan. So Brenton Doyle got the call. Now, if you'll remember from the episode I did earlier in the year where I broke down some guys who I expected to get an opportunity to contribute to the success of the major league club this year in 2023, Brenton Doyle was indeed on that list. Obviously, that would make sense. He's one of the club's top prospects, and he's actually off to an amazing start in AAA thus far this season. 12 games, he's slashing .306 with an on-base percentage of .404, OPS of 1.037, with 5 home runs and 8 RBIs and a stolen bag just to throw the cherry on top. So he's actually starting pretty hot. He wasn't the hottest in the spring. He kind of struggled to make solid contact consistently, and as a result, the club decided, okay, we know you're on the fringe of making the major league club, but we're going to start you off in AAA just to allow you to get a rhythm with limited pressure. Unfortunately, Ilaris Montero hasn't been able to live up to the pressure of being one of the prospects to make the club out of spring training. As we went over in last week's episode, he's in the blue percentile wise in pretty much every statistical category imaginable. And, you know, that's not a good thing for Ellerice. I think he does have some tweaks that he can make, not necessarily to his technique, although I'm sure he'd say that there are some things he's working on with his technique as well. It's more so along the lines of approach at the dish. And I think that some consistent reps at AAA will be a very, very good way for him to get back on track in that regard. So Brenton Doyle called up and he actually made his major league debut on Monday, I believe, against the Guardians. Didn't do too badly, was robbed of his first major league hit on an almost beat out infield single on a ball he absolutely mashed. So very encouraging stuff for Brenton. We need guys who can make solid contact in that order for sure. So that's the case with Brenton Doyle being recalled for another Rockies prospect in Ellerice Montero. Herman Marquez was also reactivated off of the injured list earlier in the week to make a start on Wednesday, I believe, against the Cleveland Guardians. It was very highly anticipated because Herman has gotten off to a fairly solid start this year. Unfortunately, his return start did not go the way he expected it to, and he ended up exiting early in the fourth inning with a triceps issue. Now, obviously, this is very concerning considering he was already on the IL for a pitching arm injury, but this is not the same injury. Obviously, the first time it was more of a forearm issue. This time it's a triceps issue, and it is above the elbow. For anyone who might be concerned that it's messing around with that ulnar region of the elbow, it is not, and he's actually slated to have an MRI today, as of me recording this, of course, on Thursday. So I'm sure we'll get word about his whereabouts and about timetable sometime soon. But in response to his reactivation, before he got hurt in his return start, the Rockies at long last made the move that everyone expected to be made. Jose Ureña was DFA'd. Now, unfortunately, it just didn't work out with Jose. I mean, in the offseason, we signed him to a one-year, $3 million major league deal in hopes that he could be a solid 3-4 guy in our rotation. That was still kind of in a development stage. But obviously, with guys like Herman being as dominant as they have been, and guys like Antonio Senzatella coming back from injury sometime within the next month, Ureña's struggles have just been a little bit too much to overcome. And he's one of the players I did say we're going to get into on today's episode. So I'll get into him in more detail in a second. But you know what this shows? It shows a significant confidence boost has been given to Noah Davis. The Rockies are very, very confident in Noah Davis, and they've seen enough in his first few starts of the 2023 campaign and effectively of his career, because he really only pitched like one inning in 2022 at the very end of the year against the Dodgers. Noah Davis, there's a lot to like about Noah Davis, and he's another guy we're going to talk about in just a second as well. But ultimately, that was the news. Jose Ureña DFA'd. Noah Davis will keep his rotation spot likely for now. I think Austin Gomber is another guy who's going to find himself on the fringe of a rotation spot here if Antonio Senzatella returns within the next month or so, and Austin hasn't found a rhythm that he can build off of going deeper into the year. Other than that, that is going to do it for what's been going on in this week of Colorado Rockies baseball. Usually, I'm going to play this sound before we hop into this segment.
The Colorado Rockies are a Major League Baseball organization with many happenings and occurrences. Chris, what's been going on?
But unfortunately, I forgot to play that here today. I forgot to play the new sound. But going forward, that will be the new sound for that new segment where we kind of just break down some very basic Colorado Rockies news over the last week. I will not forget to play this new sound, however, for our new installment segment, our newly installed segment, I should say, that we debuted last week. We're going to break down five Colorado Rockies on today's episode. This is Five Man Analysis.
Five Colorado Rockies have caught Chris's attention over the last week or so. Let's break them down. This is Five Man Analysis.
All right, all right. So on today's installment of Five Man Analysis, I already kind of spoiled a few guys who we're going to dive into a little bit. The first we'll get into is Jose Ureña. Now, obviously, I've said Jose's been a disappointment. Given a major league contract over the offseason that he really has not lived up to at all thus far in a Colorado Rockies uniform. He is 0-4 with a 9.82 ERA in 18 innings pitched. He's just struggled. He's struggled really mightily. He struck out 9 batters the entire season. He's given up 9 home runs this season as well. So when you've given up as many home runs as you have struck out batters, that's not going to spell long-term stay in the rotation for anyone on any major league roster. He's also walked 14 batters as well. His ERA plus is 51%. Now, I know I promised we're going to get into some of these more advanced statistics, and I also have promised that this show is going to be tailored to baseball fans and Rockies fans of all ages, of all experiences with the sport. So when you see a statistic like ERA plus, all that means is that it's been an adjusted statistic. It's been adjusted for ballpark-related factors. So effectively, it's supposed to give you a better understanding of who the player is as compared to players across the league at their position in that specific stat, regardless of the ballpark that they play in or the other factors that may contribute. And for Jose Urania to have an ERA plus of 51, given that an average major league pitcher would have an ERA plus of 100, which is what ERA plus's average dictator number is, it's 100. So if you have an 100 ERA plus, it means you're major league average in that statistical category. A 51 ERA plus is not good. It's 49% worse than a major league average pitcher. And that's exactly what Jose Urania has been thus far this season. So let's dive into it a little bit. We're going to head on over to the advanced statistics, and we're going to check out specifically where he ranks in certain percentile categories. Obviously, his pitch distribution this year has been a pitch distribution that I am very much a fan of. So when I look at a guy like Jose Urania, like I said on my season projections episode, I said Jose has a very good chance to be successful if he can control his pitches, because he already has a foundation of a successful pitcher who can succeed at Coors Field. Fastball, slider, changeup. And in fact, I think he almost throws them at the percentages that I think are maximal for success to be realized. He throws his fastball 55% of the time at 95 miles an hour. He throws his slider 26% of the time at 87, and he throws his changeup 19% of the time at 88 miles an hour. So those are the only three pitches he's really used thus far in 2023. Unfortunately, he hasn't seen very much success with this pitch distribution. His fastball velocity is the only pitch he has in the red. Now, we're cool on this podcast, and if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably a cool person as well. So we're going to have a little inside listener host type of moment here. Whenever you hear me going forward say that a guy is in the red or that a guy is in the blue, it's me referring to their percentile rankings in a specific statistical category. So if I say someone's in the red, it means they're above major league average. If I say they're in the blue, it means they're below major league average percentile wise. So if I say Jose Urania, for instance, is in the red in fastball velocity and that he's in the 80th percentile in the category, now you know what that means. All right, cool. Perfect. Now that we've gotten that out of the way, he is 80th percentile in the major leagues in fastball velocity, and he's 34th percentile in fastball spin. So initially off the bat, given the type of pitcher that I've said I think can succeed at Coors Field, this is a good setup. Very good setup. High velocity fastball, low fastball spin rate, and it's thrown hard. So again, I think that this is a fantastic foundation for a guy to succeed as a Colorado Rockies pitcher. Unfortunately, he doesn't get a lot of swing and miss. His chase rate percentile ranking is in the blue, 34th percentile in the major leagues, and he simply does not strike a lot of batters out. He doesn't have a ton of strikeout stuff. Obviously, he has that slider, and he doesn't do a very good job mixing in that changeup with the fastball. Probably because he doesn't have very much fastball control or command. That has been the largest issue for Urania this season. Just an inability to either control or command that primary pitch. And for those of you who don't remember the difference between control and command, it's a very simple difference. Control simply dictates how well a pitcher controls his ability to locate the pitches that are in the sense of where the catcher's set up. His ability to hit the glove regardless of where the catcher sets up, that's control. If the catcher sets up in the strike zone, command dictates how well he's able to hit his spots within the strike zone, if that makes sense. So neither his fastball control or command have been good this season, and I think that's contributed to his low chase rate and his low walk rate. He's 10th percentile in the major leagues in walk rate. Not good. When your strikeout rate, your walk rate, and your chase rate are all in the blue, this does not dictate a successful pitcher. And on top of that, his average exit velocity is in the 5th percentile. Hard hit percentage is in the 10th percentile. His expected ERA and expected weighted on base average is also in the 2nd percentile, bottom 5 percentiles of the league. Just not good. Expected batting average is also in the 6th percentile. So Jose has really not been a very good pitcher thus far this year. And based on the eye test that I've seen in the starts that I've watched of his, both in spring and to start the year, it's simply because he can't control or command the four-seam fastball, and that really doesn't allow him to set up his slider or change up very effectively at all. But I think he can make, if he makes it through waivers, that is, because like, again, when somebody's designated for assignment, I do believe that means they get put on waivers. Let me double check that really quickly. Actually, I'll double check that later. But he has been designated for assignment, which means at the very least, he's not on the major league roster. And I do believe that means another team can pick him up. I'll verify that on the next episode. But anyways, if this is part ways for Jose Ureña in terms of his relationship with the Colorado Rockies, I think it was definitely mixed, because he definitely had a foundation that he could have built off of. It's just unfortunate that that didn't pan out the way we wanted it to. The next guy we'll move on to discuss is Noah Davis. We're going to take a complete 180 from the topic of Jose Ureña when discussing Noah Davis, top 30 Rockies prospect. We traded for him a few seasons ago, I believe, in the Michael Givens deal. Michael Givens was a reliever that we had throughout the 2019, 2020, and I believe, no, 2020 was the last season we had him. We got him in 2019. And then in 2020, we traded him, I believe, midseason to the Reds when they were kind of contending for one of those postseason spots in that shortened season. And one of the guys we got back in return was Noah Davis. Now, Noah Davis is not going to be the most hyped guy within the organization, but I think that really should change, because Noah Davis has gotten called up. I think he got called up maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. He's been really, quite honestly, nothing short of fantastic. He's been amazing. Let's take a look here. He doesn't have a win or a loss yet this season. He's got an ERA of 0.93 in 9 innings pitched. That's effectively a complete game worth of pitching. He's given up 9 hits, 2 runs, 1 that was earned, only walked 3, and he struck out 10 in half as many innings. Noah Davis has struck out more batters than Jose Ureña has. That's crazy. He hasn't given up a home run yet. He's hit one batter. I believe this says that he's got a balk as well. But, you know, all in all, he's got an ERA plus. Now, I get that it's a small sample size. 9.2 innings pitched is nothing world-breaking. But in those 9 innings pitched, he has an ERA plus of 546. An ERA plus of 546. You realize what that means? It means he is 446% better than the average pitcher. That's incredible, especially for a guy in his first full season in the big leagues. Like I said, he only threw 1 inning at the end of 2022. This is effectively his rookie season. And he did have a very strong spring. I personally wanted him to make the team out of camp instead of Connor Siebold, who was sent down to AAA, I believe, last week. So looks like that would have panned out better if Davis had begun the year on the team. But nonetheless, we are where we are. Noah Davis has significant potential, and we're about to dive into that right now. So far in 2023, his pitch distribution looks like so. 46% fastball at 94 miles per hour, 26% slider at 84 miles per hour, 11% cutter at 89 miles per hour, 9% changeup at 84 miles an hour, and 8% curveball at 79 miles per hour. And so far, he's mixed pretty much every pitch very, very effectively. I watched his start against Seattle. I watched a little bit of his start against the Phillies, and I was very impressed to see that he just has balanced control and command with all his pitches. It's not like his fastball and slider are uber amazing and then he can't control a curveball for crap. He actually has the ability to control all his pitches. And when we look at his percentile rankings, sure, again, in 9 innings pitched only, about, but we see that reflected very well. His strikeout percentage is 57th percentile. His walk rate is in the 64th percentile. His chase rate is in the 72nd percentile. Now, he, again, has not started a game yet at Coors Field. He's about to start his first game ever at Coors Field this weekend against the Diamondbacks. So we'll see how that translates in that regard. Obviously, pitching at sea level is different from pitching at altitude, right? So we'll see how he adjusts. But overall, I've been very, very impressed with Noah Davis. Very impressed. Now, I get that his fastball velocity is not the highest. He's in the 39th percentile, and he's in the 23rd percentile with fastball spin. I think if both of those were raised by about 5 to 10 percentile points, he could really find himself being a very, very effective pitcher. Very effective. And he's already been very effective. Like I've said, some other stats that I didn't mention, that his expected ERA and expected weighted on base percentage or average surrendered is in the 78th percentile. His barrel percentage is in the 82nd percentile. His expected batting average surrendered is in the 74th percentile. So whatever he's doing, regardless of the fact that the fastball velo is a little bit below major league average, hanging right around 93, 94, he's controlling it well. And like I said, his balance control across his pitches are leading to a very, very high chase rate. I don't know if there's a Rocky on this team that has a chase rate in the 72nd percentile. I'd have to go check. But I really don't think that there is another Rockies pitcher, reliever, or starter, for that matter, who finds himself in the 72nd percentile of chase rate. Noah Davis does, and he's only thrown 9 innings pitched. I know it's a small sample size, like I've said numerous times in the last 5 minutes or so, but I think he's got significant potential. He's demonstrated it well, and I'm very interested to see how he attacks these Diamondbacks hitters and their lineup as a whole this weekend here in Colorado. Now we're going to take another sort of 180, and we're going to talk about Dinelson Lamet. Dinelson Lamet kind of got off to a fairly solid start in 2023. Unfortunately, it's kind of been more downhill from there. So far this season, he's 1-1 with an 8.1 ERA in 10 games pitched, 10 innings pitched. He's given up 11 hits, 10 runs, 9 earned, 2 home runs, so not terrible. Again, all things considered. In that category, he's walked 8 and struck out 13. So he does have more strikeouts than walks, which is encouraging. But all in all, it's not going to be good enough to make him a pitcher that is around league average, as his ERA plus is 63. So again, what would that make him? 37 percentile points worse than major league average? Yeah, that sounds about right. The math checks out. So let's go take a look at Dinelson Lamet, shall we? He works 2 pitches thus far in 2023. Slider 56% of the time at 86 miles per hour, and a four-seam fastball 44% of the time at 95 miles per hour. This, again, is a fairly solid setup, but he's kind of in the category that Pierce Johnson finds himself in that he throws his breaking ball more than he throws his fastball, and there are obviously some tricky issues that come with that particular decision. Strategically. But nonetheless, let's take a look at some of his percentile rankings. Chase rate, he's 15th percentile. So he does not get a lot of swing and miss. And that is very apparent. If you've watched any of his outings thus far this season, he does not really get a ton of swing and miss, even though he's got a very funky motion, which I find very, very surprising. But the funky motion might actually be contributing to this next percentile stat that we can talk about for a little bit. The fact that he finds himself in the 5th percentile in walk rate. Couple that with the fact that his fastball spin rate is in the 94th percentile. Fastball velocity is also 77th percentile, which is good. But that high spin rate fastball, what did I say earlier in the year? If you recall, what did I say? I don't want a guy who throws a high velocity fastball with a high spin rate fastball. Like that just can't be. And it's a struggle because you see a guy like Lamet, he's got a funky motion. He's already hard to pick up. He doesn't need that extra spin to be able to get hitters to swing and miss. All it does is make it harder for him to make the adjustment between pitching on the road and pitching at altitude, which he's had a fairly balanced experience with thus far this season, if I'm not mistaken. I've seen at least a few outings that he's pitched at home and a few outings that he's pitched out on the road, although I think he has pitched out on the road a little bit more than he's pitched out at home. I don't have those splits in front of me at the moment, but the bottom line is the fact that his fastball spin rate is so high, coupled with the fact that his motion is very funky and requires very pinpoint precise timing, it is really going to make it hard for him to get that walk rate down and get that control and command where he wants it to be. And as a result, he ends up finding himself in hitter-friendly counts. That's why he ends up having to throw fastballs more often than not. And oftentimes, he can't afford to miss out of the strike zone with those fastballs. So he ends up giving up some pretty solid contact. He's 37th percentile in average exit velocity and 19th percentile in hard hit percentage. His expected ERA, though, and here's where there's a little bit of a glimmer of hope. His expected ERA and expected weighted on base average surrendered is in the 58th percentile, and his expected batting average surrendered is in the 79th percentile. Expected slugging is in the 73rd percentile. Barrel percentage is in the 49th percentile. And his strikeout percentage is in the 74th percentile. So the issue with Dinelson Lamet is very, very apparently obvious. He really does need to just get the control and command under control, no pun intended. If he can find a way to set himself up in counts where he's got a pitcher-friendly situation, 1-2, maybe even 2-2, if that's the case that he finds himself in, those are more friendly than 2-1 and 3-1. Obviously. And if he can use his funk to his advantage rather than relying so much on that fastball spin to pinpoint his fastball, I think he'll find himself in a much better situation for success. Other than that, it's very encouraging. These stats say that Dinelson Lamet should be a good major league pitcher who is not 37 percentile points worse than major league average. So I think, obviously, these are things you can work with throughout the season. I'm sure pitching coaches are working with him on stuff technique-wise. I think, again, if he can get that fastball spin right down and stop relying on that to set up his fastball, which he apparently uses less than his slider, he'll just find himself in better situations, I think, overall. But other than that, those are the three pitchers that I wanted to dive into on today's episode. We'll get into two hitters that I want to dive into in just a second. Stay tuned. So thus far, we've discussed the rather lackluster performance of Jose Urania, the rather promising performance of Noah Davis, and the rather lackluster but potentially successful outcomes that could come Dinelson Lamet's way sometime in the future. But now we're going to discuss a few bats in the Colorado Rockies lineup thus far this season. Now, both of these fine gentlemen have been very successful over the course of their long major league careers, but they kind of find themselves in a little bit of a funky situation, even though they're kind of succeeding to begin the year in the Rockies lineup and have been the cause for very, very, very important run production for a very lackluster Colorado Rockies lineup, all things considered. I think that there's more in store for them if they can make a few adjustments. So the first one we're going to talk about is Charlie Blackmon. Obviously, Charlie Blackmon has a very, very extensive resume in Major League Baseball. But I did want to take a different approach to Charlie's analysis here. And the same thing with Chris. Both of these players have been very successful at points in their career. We're talking about guys in Chuck and Chris who have won batting titles, who have won Rookie of the Year, MVP. That's a lot of hardware to go around between two guys. So we're going to talk about Chuck first, but we're going to talk about it from the perspective of what's going on thus far this season in terms of their percentile rankings, and we're going to compare those to their most productive offensive years during the course of their career. So we're going to start off with Charlie Blackmon. Charlie Blackmon thus far this season is doing pretty well. Honestly, not going to lie. All things considered, he's off to a very solid start to the year. 276 batting average, 394 on base percentage, 414 slugging, which adds up to an OPS of 808 thus far this season. That puts him at an OPS plus of 112, which is 12% better than major league average. But his best season as a whole came in 2017, where he recorded an OPS plus of 141, slashing 331 with a 399 on base percentage, a 601 slugging percentage, and a 1000 OPS. That season, he won a Silver Slugger Award and finished fifth in MVP voting and was an all-star. So let's go take a look at Chuck's percentile rankings thus far in 2023, and then we'll compare them to his 2017 percentile rankings, and I think we're going to see a few interesting trends. So far this season, Chuck is doing very, very well at not striking out. Very well. 91st percentile in strikeout percentage. In walk rate, he's 72nd percentile, so he's also working counts very, very well. His sprint speed is also in the 62nd percentile, which is good to see, especially for a guy who's 36 years old. His whiff percentage is 73rd percentile, so he's not taking bad swings in the box as well. Similar case with the chase rate. Unfortunately, the areas that he's in the blue are the average exit velocity, max exit velocity, and hard hit percentage. He's second percentile in average exit velo, 43rd percentile in max exit velo, and 10th percentile in hard hit percentage, which simply means he's not hitting the ball very hard at all. Like at all. And that would go along with what my eye tests would tell me as well. It seems like a lot of the times he makes very soft contact. So while he's not striking out, a lot of the times it seems like when he's not getting a hit, it's just a soft little number on the infield. Something similar to what a CJ Cron, who we will be talking about on future episodes, is experiencing. It seems like when he's not hitting a double or a home run, he's just hitting soft little ground outs to all different parts of the infield. And I think that's something that would explain why Chuck's exit velo is so low. But what I found interesting about this is that Chuck has never been a high exit velocity guy over the course of his career. Funny enough, 2017, his best offensive season, like I just mentioned, OPS plus of 141. He had an average exit velocity of 37, or that found him in the 37th percentile in Major League Baseball. Now, his max exit velocity was 80th percentile, and his hard hit percentage was 55th percentile. But all things considered, he doesn't usually hit the ball very hard, and that's probably because he doesn't hit the ball to the opposite field a ton. He's been capable of that over his career, but he really has never been a guy to use the whole field on a consistent basis thus far in his career. But that's a significant difference from second percentile. Now, I did mention on earlier episodes on this show that I did notice Chuck has made some adjustments to his swing. He's kind of flattened his bat out again to make it look like his stance is kind of more of a replica of the stance he used in 2017 and 2018 when he had some of his better offensive seasons. And I think that is giving him a little bit more confidence in the box. Obviously, he looks more comfortable, more relaxed. But all things considered, I think he just needs to stop worrying about working pitchers and just trust his ability to put the baseball in play and put the baseball in play hard. 91st percentile in strikeout percentage is great, but in the season that he won his Silver Slugger Award and hit 331, he was 60th percentile in the major leagues in that category in strikeout percentage. Obviously, he was taking more swings even at pitches that were less likely to be called strikes because he trusted his ability to hit the baseball hard and well to pretty much all parts of the field, even though, like I said, he's been mostly a pull hitter in his career. So I would like to see Chuck take more swings, stop working so many walks, especially given that the guys behind him in the lineup have struggled to come through with runners on base and with runners in scoring position. Like Chuck recently, actually, Chuck has been batting in the leadoff spot, which is a very encouraging adjustment that I've noticed has been made by Bud Black. I did really appreciate seeing that. I think he fits better there than he does in, say, like a three hole. But all things considered, I think if he can just trust himself more to get something going rather than just worrying about getting on base for the guys behind him to try and come through, I think he's going to find that his strikeout percentage might go down, or it might go up rather, because he'd be taking more swings. But I think he'll find himself hitting the ball harder, getting more confidence, putting the ball in play, and that'll lead to more extra base hits and more productive at-bats as a whole. And it's something similar for Chris Bryant as well. We'll transition over to him right now. Chris, obviously, the hardware is just amazing. It's been really quite amazing. Since he came to Colorado, he's kind of fallen off the national radar a little bit, but people forget. It's very easy to forget now that a guy who plays in Colorado with his resume is playing in Colorado. But at one point in time, when he was with the Cubs, he was an all-star. He was the rookie of the year. He was 11th in MVP voting, as a rookie. In 2016, he was an all-star and won an MVP. In 2017, he finished 17th in MVP voting as well, and he's been an all-star 2 years later down the road. It's just really incredible that a guy like this with this type of resume has found himself playing for such a bad baseball team. But again, this is where he wanted to be. And I know he's kind of struggled, all things considered, given that his first year with the club didn't really go the way he wanted it to, given that he only played about 44 games and was injured most of the year. Nonetheless, this is the type of guy that the Rockies have in their lineup. So let's go take a look right now at how he's doing here in 2023. So far this season, he's not doing too badly. He's finding himself with a batting average of .312, obviously very solid, .379 on base percentage, .452 slugging, .830 OPS, good for an OPS plus of 116, 16 percentage points better than the average MLB player. So again, you really can't complain about any of that. The problem will come, and it will soon be revealed rather, in that even though he's got a batting average of .312, much like Chuck, he's not making very solid contact. So we can initially look at the areas that he's in the red in these percentile rankings, with the strikeout percentage being in the 75th percentile, with the expected batting average being in the 72nd percentile, and with the chase rate being in the 66th percentile, and the whiff percentage being in the 60th percentile. So he's taking good at-bats, he's seeing the ball, he's working counts, he's doing all that very, very well. Unfortunately, he's not working counts well enough to the point where he finds himself putting the bat on the ball effectively and consistently. He's 49th percentile in walk rate, which is effectively league average. Couple that with the fact that his average exit velocity is 5th percentile in the league, and his hard hit percentage is 10th percentile in the league. It's not going to look like he's as good of a hitter as his statistics might dictate. And that would come with the power as well. He's only hit 3 home runs. So he's really not, he's finding himself in a very similar situation to Chuck. He's just simply not hitting the ball hard. And we can go and compare this to his best offensive season. In 2016, he had an OPS plus of 146. That's the best he's had in his entire career. And in that 2016 season, he was in the red in most categories. He was in the red in average exit velo, 54th percentile, max exit velo, 89th percentile, hard hit percentage, 60th percentile, expected weighted on base, 95th percentile, expected batting average, 66th percentile. Same thing with expected slugging. Walk percentage, he was in the 82nd percentile in 2016, and he was barreling the ball. That's probably the most key difference here between current Chris Bryant and 2016 MVP Chris Bryant. He was barreling the baseball so well that he was in the 89th percentile in barrel percentage. Right now, like I said earlier, he's in the 23rd percentile in barrel percentage. But one very noticeable difference, similar to Chuck, I guess, these two are very, very similar. It's funny to see how similar guys are when you just dig into the numbers a little bit more. And that's what I think I enjoy the most about this podcast, is that we get to do that. His strikeout percentage in 2016, again, the year he won the MVP and had an OPS plus of 146, he was 46 percentage points better than the average MLB hitter in terms of OPS, which is, for those of you who don't know what OPS means, I kind of just been using it very loosely thus far in this episode. OPS just simply stands for on base plus slugging. So it takes their on base percentage plus their slugging percentage. Those two statistics pretty much in summary just account for how much that batter gets on base, and the slugging percentage aspect of those two, it accounts for their singles, doubles, triples, and home runs, and puts it in an at-bat perspective. So in terms of at-bat, I think the official formula is like singles plus doubles times 2 plus triples times 3 plus home runs times 4 divided by at-bats. That's what those statistics account for in terms of OPS. and OPS plus is just the adjusted factor for that statistic. So that Chris Bryant, the really, really, really good Chris Bryant, struck out so much that he was in the 33rd percentile of the league. Now, what does that mean? It just means he was taking more swings. Again, very similar to Chuck. They were at their best when they were taking more swings and trusting their technique and trusting their swing and trusting their intellect and knowledge of pitchers. So they were striking out more, but they were hitting the ball harder as well. And I think that's a very, very important aspect of a hitter who's going to succeed, not even just a Coors Field, but in general. You got to take swings, especially if you're a guy as talented as Chris Bryant is. You've got to take swings. I know you want to work walks and work counts and get on base. I know you want to put runners on for the guys in the bottom part of that lineup, but unfortunately, the bottom part of that lineup has not consistently been good enough for that to be valuable. It simply hasn't been. So when you find yourself working counts so much to the point where you're like, okay, I think he could walk me here. So let me just fight him off and let me see if he'll throw me a ball four. When you find yourself in a position where you're like, oh crap, that's not ball four. Now I need to put a swing on a ball, and you're kind of approaching your at bat from a more defensive perspective. This is how you get lower exit velo, because you're simply just trying to put the baseball in play, having worked the counts. And I think that's probably what's at play here, whether they realize it or not, is that they're trying so hard to get on base that they're finding themselves as defensive hitters instead of offensive hitters, guys who can put a ball in a gap, who can put a ball over the fence. That's who those guys have been over the course of their career, guys who can do that, guys who can be exciting hitters. So especially considering the fact that the bottom part of this order with guys like McMahon and Tovar, and younger guys like Montero, who's now not on the major league roster at the moment, but this bottom of the order, Trejo, another one, these guys aren't going to be good enough consistently to make the working counts and the getting on base for the sake of getting on base and putting runners on effective. You're going to need to realize, or they're going to have to realize, that they need to take more initiative on the offensive end and focus more on putting the ball in play hard rather than simply getting on base. But all in all, those are the five guys that I wanted to break down on today's episode. In summary, I think the pitching has its ups, it has its downs, and it has its potentials for success. Obviously, guys like Urania have really struggled, and they've really hurt the team with their lack of ability to control their fastball, which they throw most of the time, which leads to them being unable to set up their secondary pitches and their off-speed pitches. Well, I guess their secondary pitches would be breaking balls, changeups, and stuff like that. But all in all, effectively, it's interesting to see how different guys work the same types of pitches. You have a guy like Urania who throws his fastball more than his slider. You have a guy like Noah Davis who throws a fastball slider and then a cutter, which is kind of a combo of the two, and he works those very well. And then you have a guy like Lamet who throws fastball slider, but he throws the slider more than he does the fastball. And it's interesting to see how those sort of dynamics play out with different guys. Obviously, Urania hasn't been successful. Obviously, Davis has the potential to be successful. And Lamet finds himself somewhere in between Urania and Davis. And then in terms of the offensive aspect with guys like Chuck and Bryant, two guys who have been very successful at times in their career, they just need to trust themselves more. They need to stop. I know it sounds strange, but they kind of need to take a more individualistic approach. That's one of the beautiful things about baseball, is that you can try your absolute hardest to be the best individual player you can be, and it actually ends up helping the team. Like in basketball, you can't just be the guy taking every single shot every time down the floor. You're not going to win many basketball games that way if you have a guy on your team that does that. Baseball is the exact opposite. If a guy has like three or four at-bats a game, he needs to go up there and he needs to do his absolute darndest to have a very, very good at-bat, or absolutely rip a ball to a gap, or put a baseball over the fence. Anything that they do to improve their own at-bat and put themselves in a position to succeed also puts the team in a position to succeed. And I think that guys like Chuck and Chris just need to trust their inner instincts more. They need to just take better swings. They need to put swings on baseballs and stop being defensive hitters. They need to go on the attack and trust their intellect, trust their abilities to identify pitches during their course of their at-bats. And all in all, they need to take more initiative as guys who are on the front end of that lineup and take a little bit of pressure off of the back end of the lineup guys so that they can just step up to the plate and do something similar. Trust themselves to put tough, hard swings on a baseball very, very consistently. All in all, that will wrap up today's episode of Adjusting for Altitude. Thank you for listening to this episode if you've made it thus far. If you enjoy today's episode, as always, share this with your friends, with your family, or anyone else who might be a fan of Major League Baseball and or the Colorado Rockies. Thank you for listening once again, and I will see you next week. Stay safe, stay cool, and go Rockies.
This has been Adjusting for Altitude with Christopher Nelson II. If you are indeed a fan of Colorado Rockies baseball or simply a fan of MLB content, follow this podcast on your favorite podcasting platform and share this podcast with your friends and family. Baseball in Colorado is a complicated situation, but it is certainly not unsolvable. Until our next episode, take care and go Rockies.